The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
1 in 8, start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
It was very much not an overnight success for me at all. It was like, you know, 4 years of publishing novels to almost no audience and having like all of my friends succeed on a level that I was not anywhere close to, and just kind of being the one that they're like, I don't know, maybe better luck next time, you know? And then suddenly it just clicked, I think, like I said, in large part due to the fact that the world is like on fire.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. This is your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Number one, New York Times bestselling author Emily Henry spoke to me about her past life as a YA midlister, the romance renaissance, writing your way out of darkness, and her latest, Book Lovers. Emily is the number one New York Times bestselling author of People We Meet on Vacation and Beach Read, and has sold over 1 million copies of her novels. Her latest, Book Lovers, was an instant number one New York Times bestseller, multiple most anticipated read of 2022, and has been described as a love story between a by-the-book literary agent and a prickly book editor who fall in love in a small town straight out of a romance movie. New York Times bestselling author Taylor Jenkins Reid called it a rom-com lover's dream of a book, and Emma Straub wrote, quote, I would follow Emily Henry anywhere, a small town, a literary enterprise, a bookstore to rescue, and, end quote, other sexy things. Emily's books have been featured in BuzzFeed, Oprah Magazine, Entertainment Weekly, The New York Times, The Skim, and more. In this file, Emily and I discussed what it's like to live in a lightning strike, watching your friends succeed wildly, making romance more accessible to the masses, the secrets behind Hallmark Christmas movies, how to wake, wordle, and write your way to 2,000 words a day, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files. I am honored today to be joined by number one New York Times bestselling author Emily Henry is joining us. How on earth are you today?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
You know, surviving these interesting times.
Yeah.
Are you having a good summer?
Yeah. I mean, you know, basically what you said, it's like the world is on fire in every conceivable way, but I'm like writing my happy little books and I'm reading other people's happy books, and that's getting me through.
Yeah. Do you think now it's more important than ever that we have books with some hope?
Yeah. I mean, I think I keep telling myself that other generations have felt this way. But I think there have always been seasons where this has been necessary. Like, I think a lot about how when It's a Wonderful Life came out, which is like one of the best movies of all time, but it like bombed because people were just like, I don't want to be sad right now. Like, we just made it through a war. Like, let's not have a sad, like, post-war movie. So yeah, I for sure think that is like, you know, why people have really gravitated toward books like mine in the last couple of years. It's like, we just need, we do need that hope.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can't wait to talk about your latest book, Lovers, which has obviously been critically lauded, and your peers kind of came out of the woodwork to praise it, and some really, really amazing press there. But let's talk about your superhero origins and take us back a little bit, because, you know, I know we talked to so many authors about kind of the life before becoming a number one New York Times bestseller, and it's like that will kind of be attached to your name now in perpetuity, right? But it's like, yeah, you had a life before all of the success.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I feel like almost every success looks like overnight success, and almost no success is that. And for me, I had been publishing very, very, very different young adult novels before this. And so I had like this full career there that was doing these kind of strange genre bent mid-list titles that like were not necessarily critically lauded or certainly not bestsellers. And I'm like so, 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 so grateful for that, because I think that helped me have real appreciation for this moment that I'm having, and also hopefully has helped me not like cement this expectation that this will keep happening, because this is like, this is a moment and it's a beautiful, amazing moment, but a career is much longer than like a lightning strike, which I feel like is kind of the state that I've been living in for the last 3 years of just I don't understand like how this is going this well. So yeah, I was a mid-list genre bending writer, and then it was like, I think 2017, maybe it was 2016 or 2017, I was just personally like in a very dark space, and I felt like that was kind of the beginning of the end, of, like, the world too. The world seemed really chaotic and terrifying, and I was just really struggling. And so I had just turned in one of my YA novels, and I just needed something that felt happy and safe. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to immerse myself in the feeling of like, basically, like, I wanted to live inside of a Nora Ephron movie. I wanted a full month where that was like what my life was about. So I wrote Beach Read then, really, truly for myself. I didn't have any expectations as far as selling it. It was like, I have some downtime. I really want to be writing like a happy summer romance. And so then immediately I like wrote a character who right out of the gate, like her dad has just died, and like she found out he had another life, and, you know, like my version of a happy go lucky love story. So that was really like this exercise that was just all about like giving myself what I needed at that time. And a couple years went by after I wrote it, and I like was noticing this uptick in the popularity of romance novels, and seeing this like huge renaissance, like kind of led by authors like Jasmine Guillory and Helen Huang. And I emailed my agent and was like, I like think that I wrote something in this genre. Like, I'm not totally sure where it fits, but it seems like it might fit with this moment that's happening in publishing. And she read it and had a lot of thoughts, and like, you know, kind of gave me like some romance read recommendations. And I worked on it for a while, just like revising it a bit, but she was actually leaving agenting. And so she like let me down easy. You know, it was like, we'd been kind of toying with it, and she was like, I don't really know how to sell romance, but I'm going to try and figure it out. And then she was like, oh, actually I need to like retire, cause I'm going to focus on my own writing career.
Oh my gosh.
I know. And she's so great. I love her. We're still friends, but cool. It was like, you know, the moment that like, you just like, publishing is so transient. And so you're just like constantly waiting for that. And I will admit, I would like spend the whole time that we were working together being like, she's going to leave eventually. And it was great. She was like, I'm going to connect you with my agent. Actually, I think, you know, you would really like her. And so I did a few calls with different agents, including her agent, who worked a ton in the romance space specifically. And I just loved her. And she actually, like, she's friends with my former agent, and they had like,
no kidding,
fairly similar personalities, and their voices sounded kind of similar. And I was like, this would be a seamless transition. So then I signed with this new agent, and it, you know, like the rest is history. But it was not like, it was very much not an overnight success for me at all. It was like you know, 4 years of publishing novels to almost no audience and having like all of my friends succeed on a level that I was not anywhere close to, and just kind of being the one that they're like, I don't know, maybe better luck next time, you know? And then suddenly it just clicked. I think, like I said, in large part due to the fact that the world is like on fire.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I thought, you know, you had some peers say some very nice things. Taylor Jenkins Reid said Book Lovers is a rom-com lover's dream. And of course, Emma Straub, who's also been on this show,
I love her,
said that she would follow you anywhere. A small town, a literary enterprise, a bookstore to rescue, and sex in moonlit streams.
She's going to follow me there.
It sounds like Emma likes you.
I love Emma. And you know, like her book, her most recent book, This Time Tomorrow, is like one of my favorite things I've read in the last 5 or 10 years. It was one of those books that as soon as I was done, I mean, I felt like a changed person on some level, and that's so rare and such a special thing. And then I also immediately took it over to my parents' house and was like, Dad, you have to read this. This is like the things that it's so hard for daughters to say to their fathers, like in book form, just so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, congrats on the reception, Book Thank Lovers. I thought had a very nice review by NPR, had said that by both playing to and overtly subverting romance tropes and archetypes, that the book delivers an insightful comedic meditation on love, family, and going your own way. And I think that's really saying something, given that romance has, you know, kind of seen a renaissance more recently, as you noted, but to kind of take the genre and make it fresh. And as I've heard you talk about in the past, you know, you're kind of making it more accessible, right? It's not always been considered like high art for some reason, but this is truly an incredibly well-written book, and congrats. But how does that feel right now to kind of be in this place where it's like, oh yeah, like this is really actually kind of an important time for romance?
It is so weird. And like, you know, I always say weird in interviews, and then afterward I'm like, I sound unhappy. It is amazing. It is surreal. I think, like I said, there were authors who sort of opened the floodgates ahead of me. And again, I think Jasmine Guillory, Helen Huang, Sally Thorne were all people who started that process of bringing in new readers. And I wasn't one of those new readers. I was not a romance reader before that. Like, I didn't, you know, grow up on them, and had all the same like preconceived notions that I think a lot of people from my generation had. And I don't know. I mean, I think with Beach Read, like there was a lot of talk about the packaging of that book where we were like, okay, we want to get the romance readers, but we also really want to fold in like the book clubs and, you know, I don't know. We kind of were like pitching it as like, we want it to look like a softer, more inviting, like Sally Rooney cover, where we're just kind of trying to get this wide reach of people who maybe wouldn't normally pick up a romance. And I really do take it as like one of the greatest compliments I've ever gotten whenever people tell me that my book was their gateway to romance as a genre, because I know for me, like when I was in that dark headspace, romance really was the only thing that I could read. Like I was just not doing well. And I, you know, I typically gravitate toward darker, heavier books as a reader, but I just couldn't read anything without just feeling full-fledged panic. And romance was the only thing that I could pick up, and it would just pull me out of myself for a little bit. And I just felt safe in that space. And so when other people are like, yeah, I'd never read romance, and now it's like the primary genre I read in, I just am so complimented by that and so honored, because I do feel like the genre was a gift to me in a really dark time. And it's like just so amazing to be able to introduce people to this thing that was like a lifeboat to me and let it be that for them now.
Thank you. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Well, you know, as we've noted, just regarding kind of the subject matter of your books, of course, your first Beach Read starred two authors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, talk a little bit about, you know, how you get, or, you know, maybe just the inspiration or the seeds of inspiration for book lovers. And it is about a literary agent and a book editor.
Yeah.
But no spoilers here,
no
of course.
No spoilers, of course. Yeah. So I... With book lovers specifically, I usually start with a setting, and I just will find a premise that sort of folds into that setting or a character that folds into it. But with book lovers, it really started with Nora, the point of view character, the narrator. I was watching Hallmark Christmas movies in the winter, as I am wont to do, and I love them. But it's funny because it's like if you've seen three, then like you've seen, in a way, all of them, like it's just, which again, I love them. I can't get enough. I have to preface everything I'm about to say with that. However, once you've seen three, you've probably seen at least two about a hardened city person who uproots their life to go to a small town on business. And then while mm-hmm. they're there, you know, they fall in love with like a local baker and they give up their like hardened city person ways and they move to Vermont and now they make maple syrup or whatever. So I love that storyline, but there's something funny about it, which is that a lot of times there's this character who's only there in, you know, like the first half of it, who is the main character's romantic partner back in the city. And her whole job is to call him and like, you know, do the split screen to remind the audience that he has a life back in the city and it sucks. And so it's like, she's calling him and she's on her treadmill and she's like eating a salad really mm-hmm. angrily. And she's just like, have you fired everyone yet? Like, have you closed down the toy factory? Get back to the city. And she has no patience for him. And he's dragging his feet because he's starting to be changed by the local baker and the magic of Christmas and whatnot. And you know, she's there to be a foil to the person who's right for him and also as like a stand-in for his life in New York or Toronto or wherever these are supposed to be. And in watching those, you know, it's like, I am not a person who likes to take one story and say, this person is like making a statement about like the right way. Like, you know, it's not like people are allowed to have different stories. But when you see that story over and over again, you start to think like, oh, this is like actually how we think of the women. Like, this is like this is maybe what we really think. It's like, and of course it is. I mean, of course it is. It's like the woman is supposed to be beautiful, but she's not supposed to like hate leaving her house without makeup. She's supposed to be like carefree beautiful. And, you know, she's supposed to eat like whatever she wants, but also somehow magically be thin. It's like the whole gone girl, like cool girl thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we use this kind of lazy shorthand to communicate to our audience, like, this is not the person you're rooting for, where we're like, okay, you can tell she's not the person you're rooting for because she's always wearing the wrong shoes. Like, she's wearing high heels in situations where it makes no sense. And she's really impatient with children. And when she walks into the office, she throws her coat at her assistant. And some of those things are like a little bit more like there's actually like, okay, this person's mistreating someone. But a lot of it is just little weird details where you're like, okay, she likes salad. She doesn't eat a burger. She likes salad. So now we know she's like wrong and bad. And yeah, I wanted to take that character because she shows up enough that it feels like we're clearly fascinated by her. the Devil Wears Prada is like, you know, a huge mm-hmm. phenomenon that's just kind of hinging on the concept of this career woman who's like inaccessible to a point. And I just thought it would be really fun to kind of justify her, to see like, why is she this way? And also mm-hmm. to poke fun at the fact that we think that these little details that are ultimately meaningless say something about someone's character. Like, who cares if she likes high heels? Why is that a character flaw?
Yeah, that's really interesting you said Devil Wears Prada, because of course I did think of that movie reading your work. And then there was a discussion recently, and I can't remember if it was on Twitter or elsewhere, about Meryl Streep and her use of glasses as like dramatic.
I saw that and was like, wow, I never noticed that, but that's so real. Just like, it's like a way to show exasperation. You're like, I am so disappointed in you for being such an idiot.
I love that. Well, I want to talk about the making of the book and, of course, your writing process. Pick your brain a little bit about that. I've heard you talk about doing kind of a 40 days to first draft sprint.
Yeah.
And then I've also heard you talk about writing in notebooks by hand. Talk a little bit about what goes into the kind of the first part of the process, you know, kind of as you're like, I don't know if you're outlining or you're kind of like, you know, scribbling notes that you overhear in cafes.
Yeah. Like in my wildest dreams, I'm outlining. Like I hope that someday I do that. Because instead what I do is I basically like, I keep every single thing about my process as I say it, I'm just sort of like, don't do this, but it has worked for me. So I basically just keep an idea in my head until I'm ready to write. And I don't really, I might write down like one little, if I write anything down, it's like a beat of dialogue. So I'll have the idea for the premise and I'll just be kind of thinking on that for a little bit. And when I have, basically when I have like an opening scene that relates to that premise, and then like two other scenes from later in the book, kind of in my head, that's when I'll sit down to write. And like I said, like sometimes I'll like have an idea for a very specific beat of dialogue that I think fits nicely with the premise. And so I'll just like put a note in my phone for that, just so I won't lose it. But overall, like I just kind of keep it really fluid until in my brain until I'm like hammering out that first draft. And like you said, I do, like I just write furiously every single day. I write at least 2,000 words a day until I get to the end of the book. And then if I have time, I let it sit for like a week or two. And then I'll like go back through it and basically just try and figure out what I meant to write the first time. Like I write it wrong. And then by the end, usually I've figured out the characters at that point and what their emotional arc is. And so then I can go back and in some form, not quite outline, but just reorganize a little bit.
Yeah.
The scenes to make it actually make sense to reach that ending, because it's like, I just, until I know what the emotional arc is, the plot is just kind of like SpaghettiOs or something, and then it's like I have to actually make it a story after that.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, are you a morning or an afternoon writer? Do you lean on anything like coffee or
lean on
tea?
Yes.
To keep you motivated?
I am an I'm an all day writer, but it is like, I do it before anything. Basically it's like, I wake up, I do Wordle, then I do the New York Times spelling bee and quit the second that it gets to genius level, because I'm like so rewards based. It's like, I know there are more words here, but I don't care. I just needed the title. So once the New York Times tells me I'm a genius, then I'm like, I can write. And I have, you know, the same thing to drink every single morning, which right now, like, you know, for like the last year at least, has been cold brew and chocolate oat milk. Yeah, pretty tasty little like mocha situation. And I like just sit down and start, because the longer, you know, I was just doing another interview recently and I was talking about like, the truth is when I'm drafting, I wake up with a pit in my stomach every single day where I'm so afraid to start writing. Cause when you start writing, it's like, it's all going to come apart. It's all perfect until you like type it out. So I really just have to like sit down and start first thing in the day and not let that fear grow any bigger in me. Because as soon as I start writing, even if it's going horribly, that pit goes away. It's like the fear of breaking it is no longer needed because I'm already inside of the book. So I draft furiously until I get that first draft. And then it's like, yeah, like I said, just kind of go back and rewrite every single thing and rely on the same like drink and food every single day. So I don't have to make any extra decisions. Like there is an ongoing thing where like I mentioned in an interview that I eat yogurt every single day. And then that ended up like in the heading of the article. And it was like, oh my God, like this is what I gave this like professional journalist who did a great job, by the way. Like all she could really like hammer out into the headline was like, she eats a lot of yogurt. So yeah, I just like to minimize my decision making. Like, you know, I work in my pajamas and I don't, yeah, I like have Clif bars like often, like kind of just a gross, I don't know, just surviving until I'm done with a book.
Survival mode.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool to hear. Let's see. I wanted to just ask about, I don't know, this thing that a lot of writers talk about, I think when they've achieved a certain level of success, when their name is bigger than the title of the book, which it seems like is you're trending towards. yeah, is there ever like a moment of like imposter syndrome, you know, because there's there's this thing about, you know, artists and calling yourself an artist or calling yourself a writer, which, you know, is encouraged, but it's also, you know, there's probably a place, you know, at a certain point in your career where you're like, what? Whoa, who am I? Like, how did this happen?
Yeah, I mean, so first off, I'll say that I really intentionally decided to start calling myself a writer well before I published. Like, that was a decision that I made. And the reason for it was I had a full-time job, which was a technical writing job that I loathed. And so my writing was mostly done on the weekends. And I knew, like, you know, I would get invited to do things. Like, that's when everybody's free. People want to do things in the evenings and on the weekends. And I just started telling people like, oh, I can't come to that. Yeah, I have to work. And they at first, you know, there were a lot of questions where they're like, what do you mean you have to work? And gradually everyone just came to understand, like, no, I'm talking about my writing that I do not get paid for. Like, I have to work. I have to write on Saturday and Sunday. That's what I'm going to be doing. I can do something at night, but, you know, during the day, I'm committed to that. And the questions got, you know, more and more infrequent until everybody, instead the invitations are like, hey, we're going to the park on Saturday. I don't know if you have to work, but, you know, you're welcome to join, whatever. So I made this really intentional decision before I was publishing to just like take myself seriously. Yeah. And I think that's because I'm a youngest child and only daughter. And so like my whole life is just sort of like, take me seriously. And yeah, so I had already kind of done that. And so in a lot of ways, I was able to bypass that imposter syndrome because I had just decided before anyone else took me seriously that I took myself seriously. And I think the bigger adjustment now has been getting to the point of realizing, oh, I don't want my entire identity wrapped up in like the thing that I do. Like, and you know, I have a friend, this really talented writer and artist, Hallie Bateman, who was talking about shifting her perspective from I am an artist to I make art. And it's really funny because it was like I spent all these years being like, I am an artist, I am an artist. And now I'm like, no, I'm a human and I make art. And that's been really like really, really, really important for my own sanity to remember that I'm a whole person and this is like just a job. And it's a dream job, but it's a job. And, you know, and I still like matter if I don't put out a book every year. Like I'm still a person on this planet. So that's, you know, something I'm like wrestling with. But as far as imposter syndrome, that really only factors in, I think, with other authors. Like it's weird because when someone likes my books, I'm like, oh, cool. Like as readers. But when I have to send, you know, a book out to try and get blurbs, or even when I turn things into my editor, sometimes I do have that feeling of like, they're going to find, yeah, they're going to find me out. Like they're going to realize I have no idea what I'm doing. And I think, you know, especially because a lot of my reading interests are different from what I write, when I, you know, interact with other authors and other genres, I'm just sort of like, I don't know. It's a really weird thing to try and believe that someone whose work that you've admired for decades, like thinks that you're good at what you do. That's, it's just hard. Yeah. It's like hard to wrap your head around that.
Sure. Sure. Well, I want to wrap up with a fun one. And before we get your pillar of wisdom for writers on just how to persevere, I'll point at your home base. Of course, emilyhenrybooks.com. The book is Book Lovers. And you are on Instagram at Emily Henry Writes also.
Yes, correct.
So quick question. If you could have dinner with any author from any era to your favorite place in the world, who would you take and where would you take them?
Oh my gosh, that is so hard. Okay, so I would take whoever I'm taking. I feel like I would take them to like California wine country and dinner would just be like so many snacks. and then like multiple bottles of wine. And in general, when I get asked this, I'm like, I'm just going to choose an author I'm already friends with because I would probably realistically rather do that than like meet someone new.
Yeah.
But... so if I, you know, with that, I would choose my friend Brittany Cavallaro. I haven't seen her in a couple of years and that would be amazing. But also I do think it would be really fun to hang out with Jane Austen and just like, I don't, just like let her know how much her work has continued to be like the end all be all for so many people. And also like, I think she doesn't get enough credit for being really funny and it would be fun to, yeah, to just like, laugh with Jane Austen.
Yeah, and Brittany, and just like party.
Yeah.
All right. Sounds like a good time. Your final pearl of wisdom to writers on just how to keep going.
Oh, I think just the constant reminder that it's hard for everyone and it's not just you is like really helpful to know that it doesn't mean anything about you or your ability or your worthiness when you're struggling, or even, you know, if you're publishing and you feel like your publisher doesn't care or like nobody's buying your books or, you keep striking out with agents, whatever phase. I just think knowing that everyone's been there and there really is no such thing as that overnight success is really comforting because it's like your self-doubt isn't special. Like everybody's got it. It doesn't mean anything about you.
Love it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today. Emily, we appreciate your words, your wisdom. Come back anytime. And yeah, best of luck with your future endeavors.
Thank you so much, Kelton. This was great.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.